Welcome back to the saddle that is Behind the Beard WNC, a podcast where several friends get together and we banter about any number of topics, but usually it always gravitates towards sports and specifically high school football. And fortunately, we're finally starting to get ready to get back into football season because we've been in the doldrums ever since the end of basketball. Sorry, Mike.
Come on, baseball.
Yeah. Anyway, we usually get things started off with the coaches' interviews, and today we've got a real special guest, the head coach of the Rockets of AC Reynolds, head coach Shane Laws. Coach Laws joins us with, he was head coach starting in 2007. He's got about 13 conference titles under his belt, a couple of state championship teams. He was the head coach for one of them, and the runner-up state championship team in 2017. And Coach, thanks for joining us today. We're glad to have you.
Appreciate it. Thanks. It let me be here.
Yeah.
So just 13 conference champions. What happened the rest of the years?
I'm only kidding. We had to wait 9 years. I don't know.
I'm only kidding, Coach. Pat, what have you been into?
Well, you know, I just working all the time, it seems like. And, you know, we're empty nesters, so we're trying to keep Mary from throwing me out of the house. I'm trying to stay as busy as possible. What about you, Mike? I know you're racing like crazy.
Oh, yeah. Done umpiring, had a first-round playoff game, and just racing all the time. All the time. So, doubleheader in Wisconsin this week.
Coach, I know you just got wrapped up with some spring ball practice. Obviously, a chaotic year last year with the storm that came through and the damage that was done. Obviously, with the Fairview community was awful. You managed to still compete though at the end of the year and battle again for the conference championship as always. And you're now reloading. You're getting a whole new squad together, and you just got done with spring ball. So, what's it looking like? What are you seeing out there?
Spring ball was really good. I felt like it was a little bit crazy because you got baseball players that are still finishing up the season. Our baseball team played a few games into the playoffs, and then our track guys, we had several track guys that made it to state championship. And so once we finally got everybody together for about the last five or six practices, it really gave us an opportunity to sort of get an idea of who we are or who we're going to be in the direction that we're going. And I was pleased. I thought the kids worked hard. We were able to install some basic things offensively and defensively. We've obviously got a new quarterback, so we've got to, you know, get him caught up, and we've got some new offensive linemen. I think we have the opportunity to have a really good football team. And you know, I'm going to say the same thing every other coach is going to say when they're on this thing, as long as we don't get hurt, you know, as long as we can stay away from the injuries. And the one thing, and the college guys will tell you, and it's trickled down to us, I think the biggest killer that the transfer portal has put on us is don't have backups anymore. We don't necessarily have a problem with numbers, but you don't have twos anymore. The twos transfer where they can be ones. So when you get a one hurt, you go to a three or a four. And but we're all dealing with that. That's not a Reynolds problem. That's everybody. And so, you know, we can stay healthy. Last 2 years, we've dealt with several injuries. So hopefully that's not going to be a problem for us this year.
So you mentioned a new quarterback. I know last year, big hype going into the year with your quarterback. Unfortunately, the storm happened, transferred out. Really, it seemed that the year before with Hayden Craig was almost a better fit in your system. Is that just a product of being in the system a long time versus coming in and trying to fit in brand new, or what do you attribute that to?
I think a lot of being a really good quarterback is fitting into the system, understanding the guys you're playing with, and no matter what your skill set is, you know, a good quarterback is a really good point guard. It's your job to get the ball to guys that can make plays. And Hayden was really good at that. Hayden did a great job of that. And we had a quarterback that transferred in last year, started the season with us, who had all the skills in the world. I mean, obviously, he's a D1 prospect. And I thought at times he was trying to manufacture things instead of just, you know, letting it happen. But also, you know, we only got to be together for a small amount of time, and he was actually starting to play pretty well. when the storm hit and everything got turned upside down. But Avery Hollifield transferred in from ACA and had a great year last year for them. And he throws the ball well. He's very intelligent, athletic kid. I love the way he approaches his teammates. Kind of one of those quiet leaders. And the way he's taken to our style of coaching, which at times can be a little volatile. but it's like he loves it. And it's he's a competitive kid. And he enjoys playing with the other guys on our team, especially the other guys on the offense. I think he's going to be a really good Rocket. I think he's going to help us a lot, kind of settle us down in that quarterback position where everything kind of went chaotic after the storm.
So was he the head? Was he the starting quarterback at ACA? So he had those huge numbers.
Yeah,
huge numbers.
Yeah, he was the one putting up all those big numbers last year.
So you also mentioned the storm. I mean, that was a crazy year. These seniors had COVID and a hurricane. So how do you move forward from last year? Tough year in the Fairview community, even with your football team. How do you move forward from that?
We want to run from it. I mean, I want to get as far away from that as we can get. I mean, there were, you know... It just affected our football team in so many ways. You know, obviously what was going on in our community around us. We've got members of our football family that aren't with us anymore because of it. You know, watch my, you know, Coach Craig, who I've coached with forever. He's one of my best friends in the world. He's the guy that I'm going to call at 3 o'clock in the morning when things go bad. And I'm watching him go through what he's going through. And he's still trying to figure out a way to coach these kids. And so, you know, we're ready to move on. We want to get away from that because, you know, it's just there was a lot that we want to leave in 2024. But the one thing was the resiliency of our kids. I mean, that is what impressed me the most. You know, it seemed like every week after the storm hit, there was something new that they were dealing with. Whether it was an injury, we lose a quarterback, you got another guy gets hurt, this guy gets hurt. But they just kept finding ways to win. Eventually we got into a situation down at Dudley and I've been to Dudley and I've won at Dudley, but you win at Dudley with really good teams. And not saying our guys weren't really good. We were really good 5 or 6 weeks before we got there. But they were just too much for us after everything that had kind of broken us down a little bit by the time we got there.
I know in conference you were able to – you took care of the two big rivals, TC and Asheville, real close loss to a very good Irwin team. First-round win in the playoffs, second round you ran into Dudley. Tough. They're always tough.
They're good. I mean, they're really good. They're incredibly athletic. Those are some of the best players in Greensboro. You know, they either go to Dudley or they go to Grimsley.
Right.
And I was really impressed with them defensively. That was one of the best defenses that we played against in a few years.
Better than Kings Mountain?
Yeah.
The year before?
Yes, I think so. I think just the speed, how fast they could close, and the depth that they had. I can remember in the Kings Mountain game, they were very good. They were very good defensively, but they had some holes when they would sub, when they would substitute. Dudley didn't. Dudley would take out Dudley would take out a 290-pound defensive or nose guard and replace him with a 285-pound nose guard who was a little quicker.
Wow.
So you couldn't really find those places. And by that point, you know, we lost, I guess Wes was our third quarterback. He started the game, and we lost Wes in about the beginning of the second quarter with a concussion. So we were basically running a wildcat offense that we had about 6 or 7 plays for emergency situations for TP. And I know TP didn't get off the bus thinking I'm going to be the quarterback all night long. But unfortunately, it just, you know, we felt like, you know, we were fighting with one hand behind our back against a, you know, really big opponent. And it didn't work out. But the kids did the same thing they did all year. They just kept, they fought. And they, you know, they had a lot of pride in who they are and where they came from. And that's all you can ask when they get put in a situation like that.
So, Coach, you know, you already kind of alluded to it with the college thing where you're saying there's no second string really anymore. I've noticed, obviously, it's been the Wild West up with what's going on in the college ranks. How is that impacting high school football? Do you see? I mean, what's it doing?
I don't want to be the doom and gloom guy, but I'm going to be honest, because parents that have kids that are aspiring to be college football players, it's rough. It's rough for those guys. And I'm not saying you can't do it. You still can. There's plenty of opportunities to go play college football, and we're still sending guys to college to play, and we'll continue to. But the opportunities are – they're just so much they've been cut by probably about a third. And right now it's, you know, all the college coaches I talk to, whether it's a Power Four coach or a D2 or a D3 coach, they're all trying to figure out what's the right number for us. What's the right number of high school players? What's the right number of portal guys? And, you know, how are we going to approach developing players as opposed to just bringing guys in? How are we going to do the money? All that they're, you know, I've got a lot of friends that are college coaches, and I don't feel sorry for them because I know how much money they make, but, but at the same time I do, because it's almost an impossible task that's been put in front of them. If you're not Ohio State, Georgia, you know, maybe 8 or 10 programs, everybody after that is trying to figure it out. You know, where do we fit in all this? You know, talking to a coach from Western the other day, they've decided now, very recently, we're going to start recruiting local guys now. Well, you didn't do it, you know, because they hadn't done it forever.
Right.
And I was told, you know, I hope I'm not throwing them under the bus, but I was told by them, you know, the last few years, we're pretty much doing everything out of the portal. And I don't know if that's working. And so it's kind of, you know, how does it relate to the high school player? I think that the high school player's got to understand that you got to be able to play, and you've got to be the total package. And on top of that, you know, like I said, you've got to be willing to work hard. Academically, you've got to have it together. You've got to have a really good profile. People have got to think of you as, you know, the all-American guy in a lot of ways, and you've got to be a good player. You got to have the right body type, and you got to be willing to, maybe I got to go to a D2 school. I think I'm good enough to play in the ACC, but I may have to go play at LR for 2 years to prove to state that I can play there.
Right.
Or I'm going to go play at Furman for 2 years, and then, you know, then I'll go do the Tennessee thing or whatever it is. It's all new, and I think right now we're still in the process of everybody trying to figure it out, and nobody's even came out yet with the details of what revenue sharing is going to look like, because you've got programs right now that are deciding at the college level, are we keeping walk-ons or are we not keeping walk-ons, depending on if they go through revenue sharing. We're going to put everybody on scholarship. We can scholarship 105. Or are we just going to put everybody on scholarship? And then you've got some of the FCS programs that are saying, well, we want to be able to keep our walk-ons, so we're not going to do revenue sharing. And I think they're going to grandfather walk-on kids that are already at places right now where they can stay. But I mean, that, how are we doing that to walk-on guys? That's the story of college football that everybody likes to tell, because there's always that guy. Every program's got him, and every program has multiple stories about the walk-on guy that came in and turned into a really, you know, a really productive player. And then on top of that, you've got so many walk-on guys, they're just happy to be there. They know they're not going to play very much, but they love football. Maybe they want to coach one day. Maybe they want to work in football one day. They just want to stay close to the game. And, you know, I may not ever get to play, but, you know, 20 years after I graduate, I can still say I played at such and such. Nobody's going to go back and look and see how much I played. Yeah.
What about the You know, that rule change that also came in with all of that was that JUCO thing where you can go do JUCO for a couple of years and it not count against your eligibility.
Some people, evidently the rule is some people can go do JUCO and we're not going to count their year.
But that's not universal at all?
No, I mean, Caden Robinson, the guy that played for us, you know, did a year of JUCO and felt like he was going to get that year back. So transferred from Appalachian, he was going to play his last year at UCLA, and found out, I think after he already got out there, that they weren't going to honor that. He didn't get his year back, but some guys did.
Wow.
And I think he's in the process right now trying to appeal that, but it's everybody's not getting it back.
Wow.
It is wild. When you're a college and you have to hire sports-specific GMs, wild times.
It's got to permeate eventually. If it doesn't, it don't get a handle on it. It's going to permeate down to the high school level.
Oh, man, we're dealing with it. We're just dealing with it, you know, in a miniature version of what they're – I mean, everybody knows one of my daughters is a recruiting intern at Carolina right now in the middle of all that. And I get great stories from her. I mean, but it's, you know, the way they're trying to transform the program into this really NFL model. And I think a lot of eyes are going to be on Carolina because they're going to, does it work? It's either going to, in my opinion, it's either going to go really well or it's not. It's not going to go well at all. But people are going to copy it if it works because you've got, for the most part, an NFL staff both on the field and in the offices. And they're trying to put a team together similar to the way you would a team in the National Football League.
Where's the additional money come to pay for the additional staff?
That's a good question. And that's kind of my question has been throughout all of this. I am not a wealthy person, and I probably never will be, but people who have the kind of money to finance this, you know, forever those folks that would send that kind of money into college football programs did it so that they could, you know, that you'd build a building and it would have their name on that building, an indoor practice facility, a weight room. We'll redo the locker room and we'll call it the such and such locker room. Well, now that we're asking those folks to pay the players, and I haven't talked to college guys about this. I don't know how they feel, but at what point do those folks decide, I'm not really getting the same return on my investment that I was getting when I built that locker room? And everybody knows that we built that locker room because, you know, I'm paying three DBs and, you know, one of them transferred, one of them didn't pan out, and the other one we're still trying to figure out, you know, just kind of those kind of stories. And I don't know, you know, how much longer people that can do those kind of things with their money are going to want to.
Do you think we see contracts in college where they have to stay?
Yeah.
You got to, right?
Yeah, I think that's one of the first things we're getting ready to see. We're going to see that.
Last question about college. We're way off track. We're supposed to be talking about Reynolds football.
Oh, we'll be getting back to it.
But would you ever consider being a college coach?
I used to think I would. I'm not sure now. You know, I got into coaching because I knew what coaches did for me. And how much I thought of the guys that coached me when I was playing and just the impact that they had. And it made me want to do this. And I feel like at the college level, I'm not saying that part of it's gone, but we're losing a lot of that because it's just becoming talent acquisition. It's not recruiting a good football player and developing him for 4 or 5 years, both on and off the field. Now it's just talent acquisition. The same thing they're doing in the NFL, and I'm not sure if I fit in that model.
Yeah, it's tough. And you see a lot of the older college guys, and they're stepping down. They're moving on. Yeah. I mean, this ain't for me. Mm-hmm. So,
well, bridging back to Ace Reynolds football. Now, I had to ask that because I was just dying to know. But anyway. You know, you already brought him up before. Ty Patterson, obviously, he comes in. That was his sophomore year that he came in when Max got hurt the first time. Tyvon came in and he took over Max's role when Max got hurt in that scrimmage. And he obviously did great that year. And he split time last year with Max. Or not split time, but they were both in the backfield. So, I mean, obviously, Max is back, but Tyvon obviously is still doing well. He's got to be probably an important part of the program in offense this year.
Yeah, he's huge. I mean, there's so many things that TP does well. And when he's got the ball in his hands, and that's kind of our job. We've got to figure out as many different ways as we can to get him. And Jaden Smith, Jaden Smith's the other running back that I don't feel like people talk about enough. All of those, him and TP in particular, have just sort of been sitting there waiting behind Max. And when their numbers have been called, they've been great. They've came into ball games and made big plays for us. Well, now you're going to get to see them a whole lot more with the ball in their hands. And the two totally different running styles. Both of them are very tough kids. Both of them run well. And they're seniors, and they've been around the block. They know what's going on. They're both pretty good leaders in their own way. I'm really excited for those two kids. They're two kids that I really love, and I love their attitude about the way they approach all the things that we ask them to do, and I think they're going to have a great year.
And you already mentioned you've got that quarterback that came over from ACA. Obviously, high expectations for him too, I'd say.
Yeah, we've just got to get him where he understands the offense, and he's a smart guy. He's going to. By the time we open the season with Brevard, he'll know. He knows what he's going to know what's going on. I told him at the end of spring ball, I said, don't panic. I said, right now you're drinking water out of a fire hose. I mean, we're throwing so much information at you and you're having to process so much. I know it's all bouncing around in your head, but he got better every day. Every day at practice, he was a little bit better than he was the day before in handling all the information that was coming in, what he had to do, where he had to move people, and, calling protections and all these different things. He continued to get better each day. I have very little doubt that he won't play really well for us.
I know ACA threw the ball on every play. Did you have to teach him how to hand it off? Because they literally never ran the football.
When he first got to Reynolds, we told him, he said, you're going to have some really good running backs standing behind you. And on top of that, our quarterbacks run with the football. Yeah, how do you feel about that? He said, I love it. He said, I never got to run. Everything I did was a pass. It was, we knew it was a pass. And so we even installed a couple quarterback runs in spring ball. And he's a strong kid. He's not a little guy.
Right.
So, and I love that. I love to have the threat of the quarterback run, even if you only do it once or twice on Friday night. When defenses know that cat will run, it just slows everything down, and him having the ability to do it, and you've got those other two good running backs on the field. It just, I don't know, it just, it puts defenses in some tough situations.
I know watching him play last year against Owen in what was an incredible football game. I don't know how many yards he threw for, but it was a bunch. And he would have games with 600-700 yards passing. I mean, He could throw it.
He throws it well. He's left-handed, so our guys had to get used to that, this little different spin. But he throws – I mean, people say this all the time. I know it sounds stupid, but it's real. He throws a very catchable ball, and the receivers, for whatever reason, just catch his ball really well. He gives them a chance on a lot of different plays, and he's going to do well.
That'll make Klepper pretty happy.
Klep's happy because Klep needs a good ball thrown to him for him to catch it. Yeah. So, no, Klep is my boy. Yeah. He's a football player. He's tough. He loves it. He'll do anything you ask him to do. He loves his teammates. He loves being a rocket. He kind of checks all the boxes with the exception of – not being really fast, but other than that, man, he's a Reynolds football player.
Now I saw he posted, I think, on social media or somebody shared it with me. He got that offer to UVA. Why? So good for him.
Yeah, Klepp's going to go somewhere, because Klepper has that toughness and that intelligence and just the things that football coaches want in their locker room. He's one of our leaders, obviously. And I think, I don't want to put him in a bad spot, but I'll say it anyway. I mean, I think all football teams need one or two guys in the locker room that are a leader that the other guys don't, I don't really want to fight him. And So I may disagree with him, but I don't really want to fight him. And we got a few of those, and I think Klepper's one of them. And it's not that I don't know if it's the rest of the guys on the team feel like he can whip them. This is like, well, we'll have to kill him to get him to stop, probably.
So for the last, several years, we've talked about Max Reynolds and Max, your quarterback. You mentioned already TP and Jaden Smith, but who else are we going to see step up this year that maybe we haven't heard of that is going to be a difference maker for your team?
Oh man, I think defensively, I think if we had to play tomorrow night, everybody's going to be talking about the defensive side of the football. We've got a lot of guys back who have played a lot. Our defensive line and our secondary will probably, early on be the strength of that defense. We've got four defensive linemen, Brandon Ledbetter and Ernesto Reyes and, Jay, who's back. We've got Sam Trammell, who transferred to us last year from ACA, never got to play in a game. He looked great in practice and tore his ACL.
And, wow. That's
tough. I mean, he's, and then we got Chad Black back, who we moved the defensive line late last year. I mean, he's a big guy. He's 6'4", 220. And we moved him late from the offensive side of the ball, and he kind of started taking off a little bit, had a good spring. We can rotate four or five defensive linemen right now that are all-conference type defensive linemen. And then in the secondary, we got Raymond back. We got Gio back. Guys that have played a lot of games. Tremaine Keeter, who everybody saw catching balls a lot on the offense, and he'll still do that this year, but we're moving him to corner. That's probably his more natural position. Zion Akeem's coming back. He's back. So, he led us in interceptions as a freshman. So he'll more than likely, take that other corner position. And I'm saying the same thing about the secondary. You got four guys in the secondary who are probably four all-conference secondary guys. And we've, Stacyon Taylor at linebacker and who's played a lot. And, we'll have a couple young guys fighting for jobs at linebacker. But on the defensive side, we're going to have a lot of guys who've – played a lot. And Javaris up front, he played really well for us last year, and it's just fundamentally got better. You brag on all those guys and they're all good players, and we've got a lot of work to do in front of us, but it's like I said earlier, we've got to stay healthy, because we lose one of those corners, we're going to play a really young corner who hadn't played a whole lot. We lose one of those defensive linemen, you're playing a guy that's a 10th grader probably. Just because, backup guys don't stay at Reynolds. They if I'm a backup, then I'll go to so-and-so where I can be a starter. That's not a Reynolds problem. That's a high school football and a college football problem right now.
So, you got any freshmen coming in that we're going to see play?
If we do, I haven't seen them yet. I don't mean that in a bad way.
They haven't been there yet. You haven't had some.
No, I haven't. I'm not allowed to work with freshmen until after the last day of school.
Until they're actually freshmen.
Until they're actually. I
wasn't trying to insinuate you were down there at the middle school working with those kids.
No, I know. I've met with both groups of freshmen, the group from Cane Creek and the group from Reynolds Middle, both good-looking groups.
Cane Creek had their best year in a while, if I remember correctly.
Cane Creek had a really good group of eighth graders. And it's a kind of a group that we've been waiting on a little bit. And it's not so much that they're just loaded with talent, but it's a bunch of football players, a bunch of guys that are tough kids that love playing football, kids that have played a lot of football, kind of come up through our youth league, and kids that are fired up and excited about being Rockets. And so we're excited about those guys.
So being a former offensive lineman myself, that's near and dear to my heart. You lost a couple of key players on that offensive line. And what does that look like? I mean, I know you got good running backs and a good quarterback, but there's nobody up front. What does that look like?
We actually, That's one of the places where we're not real deep. That's one of the places we're doing a lot of work.
You and everybody else in West North Carolina.
And everybody everywhere, yeah, with exception, I think, of East Forsyth, Grimsley, and West Forsyth. But we, you know, we've got Aiden Truesdale back, who's played in a ton of games. We're trying to move him to, you know, take – he moves a little better, and we're trying to bump him out to tackle, see if he can do that. We kind of played with that during the spring. And Blaine, we moved Blaine to center, who played – he was a freshman that played for us a good bit last year in special situations. But he's – I love him. I love his grit. He just gets after it. He doesn't always know where he's going, but he's going somewhere, and he's going fast, and he's going hard.
he's a good kid.
He is. He's a football player too. And then we got Zach. You know, big Zach is Zach Alassi. He's kind of – Him and Truesdale are anchors of that group, and we've got some other kids, younger kids that we're working there right now. I think there is the possibility to have a pretty good offensive line if those guys can learn and come along fast enough. You know, that's the position everybody's ready. You know, everybody wants to jump on offensive lineman when you're having a hard time running the ball, or when a quarterback doesn't have a ton of time, but offensive linemen don't grow on trees. Mm-mm. And they take a lot of time to develop. There's, you know, outside of the quarterback, those cats before the ball is snapped are processing so many different things. And it's not an easy position to play. So, you know, we've got one of the big things for us, we got Coach Greer. We got one of the best offensive line coaches around, and he's working those guys hard. And I think, you know, if we can just – we've got a limited amount of time, and we've got a lot to teach before we play Brevard.
Yeah, well, you just bridged perfectly into the next question, your staff. You already talked about Coach Craig, obviously a legend. What he does with the defense is amazing. Coach Greer, he moved down to offensive line last year.
Mm-hmm. Wait, moved down?
Well, not down, moved over. I'm sorry, not down, obviously. He moved over to offensive line, and Coach Brow, he's still coaching.
Yeah, he's coaching receivers. And that's where he's good. Coach Brow, when he was offensive coordinator all those years, he coached the receivers. And he's really good there. And then, of course, we got Coach Morgan. And it's our offensive coordinator. And we've got Coach Pike is still with us, coaching those running backs. And you know, that's a group that's been with me for a long time, and done a really good job for us. And then defensively, you know, Coach Craig runs that defense. I'm back coaching a position. I'm coaching the secondary. I've done that the last couple of years. That was kind of what I always did when I was a young coach. I coached the secondary, so I'm back doing that. And you get, you know, Coach Lamont is coaching those linebackers, and of course you got Coach Stevens with the D line. All that's been one of the blessings that I've had is this group of coaches that have, you know, stayed with me for so long, and it's been such a good group for us, you know, all being together, and they've done such an amazing job. I don't know how I could keep doing it without them, because they're my guys, and they're a lot now. They're kind of more like family.
I know Pat beat me to the question, but so last year I asked you, or one of us asked you, what was the biggest challenge of being a high school coach, and you said putting together a great staff, and it sounds like you've been able to keep that staff.
That's the, you know, people will say nice things to me or about our football program, and you know, they want to attribute success that we've had to me. It is not me. The only thing I will take credit for is putting this group of coaches together. Because when I got the job in 2007, that was the goal, was to put the best guys I could in front of our kids, guys that were good guys that were going to take care of the kids, and two guys that could coach them, not just bring a guy out there because he said he wanted to coach. I mean, I want real coaches. And a lot of my staff, if, you know, they wanted to, they, you know, they'd go be head coaches somewhere else. But they've chose to stay, and I appreciate it. And they're really good at it.
winning games keeps people around.
It does.
Winning's fun. Treated right.
I mean, yeah, I mean, winning's fun, and I try not to be a hard guy to deal with. Joey Green, too. I forgot about Joey. I got Joey, too. I mean, Joey's the sort of the straw that stirs the drink. He just, you can't say, well, this is Joey's job. No, everything's Joey's job. Coach Green kind of does everything. It's just, I don't know if he really knows what he's going to do that day until he walks into the coach's locker room and whatever problem I throw at his feet. You know, this is, you know, he'll say, what's up, boss? And I'll give it to him. This is what's up. This is where we're at. This is what we're dealing with. And he tries to find a way of fixing it.
Yeah, he's your cleaner.
He is, man. He's I don't know. I watch, everybody knows I'm a big mob guy. I'm a mafia guy. I love all that stuff. And he's the guy that cleans up and fixes all the messes, for sure.
Nice.
Hey, you know, this is a bridging into a thing. Last season when we did all the coaches interviews, Mike, you probably remember this too. It seemed like a theme coming up from all the head coaches we're talking about, like Coach Laws, Coach Dinwiddie, Coach Pruitt. They've all been around here for quite a while, and at some point, people are going to start retiring and going out.
They're all going to be gone except Court, and he's going to have his pick, I think, of wherever he wants to go.
And they were saying that as a concern because there wasn't anybody coming up really behind to fill these spots so much. I mean, is that something you've noticed too, Coach?
Yes, and before I talk about that, I don't want to forget this. Talon James. Talon is back on our staff. Talon played for us, played in a state championship game, went on and played in college and came home and decided he wanted to help a little bit and is coaching our tight ends and doing a great job. I don't want to forget Talon because he works his tail off. But, yes, this is kind of, you know, as an older coach, and I'm starting to see the end of this, I don't want high school football in Western North Carolina has always been different. It's always been special because I think we do it a little different than they do it in other parts of the state. And I think in a lot of ways we do it more right than they do. But what I'm worried about is what you just said. There's a lot of coaches in this area who are getting closer to the end of it and are going to be ready to start doing some other things. And it's not easy to get guys to do what we do. And then on top of that, the thing that nobody wants to talk about, I don't want to get into a lot of political stuff, but, you know, the county commission just went through their thing where they cut all this stuff out of education to make, all right, well, at some point we're going to have to put some money into it because when I came to AC Reynolds in 1997, Coach Potts hired me. I was able to, me and Katie and I were not married yet. I was able to move up here. I had a little apartment at Turtle Creek Apartments. I was able to live there.
In Hall Creek?
No, Turtle Creek is over in South.
Oh, it's South Ashford.
Oh, yeah, in Arden.
Yeah.
And I was able to live over there and pay my rent, pay all my bills. I didn't live great, but I could live. I can't hire a young guy coming out of college right now that wants to come be an assistant. Or you can't hire it. You know, the other thing is that nobody thinks about, you know, let's say one of these head coaches retires and leaves and then you got a great coach and then, you know, down in the foothills or the eastern part of the state that wants to move up here and take that job. Well, that guy is going to, you know, sell a house for $350,000 in the eastern part of the state. Where's he going to move?
Yeah, great question.
His wife better make a lot of money.
Yeah. And, you know, these are things that nobody's talking about.
Right.
And these are things that worry me about the coaching, not just the coaching part, but education in general. And people are not lining up to take teaching jobs right now. And teaching and coaching jobs, not when, you know, you can ask, you can try to get somebody that's a math teacher. You know, we really need a tennis coach. And you'll find somebody that's got a tennis background, and we ask them to be a tennis coach. And because they're a pretty good math teacher, and they'd be great for the kids. Well, why am I going to do that for what you're paying me to be a tennis coach when I can work two nights a week at the brewery and make that in 2 weeks? And, you know, that's my soapbox stuff for this podcast. People better start looking at what's going on in education, what's going on in coaching, because we all love what happens on Friday nights. We all love those full gyms in the wintertime and these some of these big time baseball games, high school baseball games around. All that stuff's going to go away soon if we don't start investing in the people who make all that happen.
I agree. The other piece to the puzzle is, you know, I have a buddy. He was a high school baseball coach. He can go be an assistant baseball coach at a private school and make 3-4 times as much as an assistant coach and not have to be there all day and not have to do all those other things.
Well, I mean,
the public schools aren't paying the money necessary to retain the coaches, and not just football, every coach.
No, and then, but the thing that frustrates me is all you got to do is go to the state, to our south, go to South Carolina.
Right.
Go to Georgia.
Georgia, yeah.
Look what they're paying coaches. Look what they're paying teachers.
Yeah.
And you're going to tell me those two states are operating or financially or that much better, more, you know, better off than we are?
They're just spending their money differently.
Well, it's what they value.
Yeah.
And to me, it looks like our state right now does not value our schools. It doesn't value the people that work in them.
Right.
And it doesn't value the people who are spending a whole lot of time trying to help raise kids.
The other piece is the education lottery. It doesn't seem like a lot of the North Carolina money is going back to the North Carolina schools.
No, that's a crazy thing, too. You know, I've got friends that coach in Georgia. I've got friends that coach in the colleges in Georgia. And they tell you, and I'm asking, well, how do you do this and how do you do that? Well, that's the education lottery. That's the education lottery. We use it for that. It's crazy that they actually use the education lottery money and put it back into education. I'm not sure what we do with ours, but.
No, you're right. You're right. So let's talk about your schedule.
Yeah, definitely.
It's quite a bit different this year. No Shelby. Years have you played Shelby?
Yeah.
Since I started.
That's
in
a
2000.
Long time.
That one's the one that I hate losing.
I know.
Both of us.
And
too.
For Shelby, it was it's a conference thing, right?
Yeah, Shelby was put in a big conference. They only had two non-conference playing dates. Well, they've got a rule in Cleveland County. They have to play the other two Cleveland County teams. So they have to play Crest and they have to play Kings Mountain. So they had no place to put us. And it got, you know, that game has been, I've always enjoyed going down there and playing. I like their fans. I like their people have been good to us. They know high school football down there. They appreciate good football.
They're a hell of a team.
And they're always a very good football team. A lot of the guys are the guys on that staff are guys that are really good friends of mine, a lot of them all the way back to our time at Appalachian. And I just really enjoyed playing them because you were going to play against a good team. It was going to be a clean game, and it would give us a good idea of where we were, and in particular against a spread team with a lot of speed. It would answer a lot of questions for us. And on top of that, when we played them at home, their fans traveled.
Yeah.
It was just a really good game. Yeah.
Hey, at least you went out on top. It took you 2 days, but you beat them pretty bad.
that was crazy. That was one of the things I've been coaching a long time. Go to Shelby 2 days in a row and outplay them. I would have bet you a lot of money you couldn't have done that.
I bet your AD was fantastic. Really happy about 2 days of bus rides to Shelby.
Yeah. And I think football paid for those cards and all that stuff that people buy.
So your non-conference, you got Brevard. They've been on a heater the last couple of years. Yeah. Been 11-3 last year.
Good program.
You got Maiden, 8-4 last year. J.M. Robinson. Oh, I mean, that's a fantastic program. The surprise, I think, for a lot of people, Murphy. 12-2 last year. They're a good football program.
Well, this is how Murphy happened. I'm good friends with Joseph and was friends with – you know, those guys for a while, and we got to this was when you get put in a conference the size that ours is, the problem is now I got to find five non-conference games. I can't find four. I can't find three. And now you're telling me I got to find five, and we can't find people to play us. And so we got four of the five non-conference games scheduled, and Murphy kind of runs into the same stuff that we do because they're always good and they're over there in the middle of nowhere by themselves. So nobody
right.
wants. And anyway, I said, Joseph, what do you want to do? You want to play? And it got to the point where neither one of us really had much choice. If we're going
to
play 10 and not drive to the eastern part of the state, then we're going to play one another. And so that's where that came from. And I've got a lot of respect for them and their program. They obviously do football really well.
Oh, it's going to be for a long time. They did a good program.
It's going to be a lot of pressure on us. I mean, and they're supposed to be really good this fall.
And then Freedom. So I've talked to a lot of coaches that say they had to make a lot of phone calls. How many phone calls did you have to make to get your non-conference in?
That's all I did for about 2 months. And the part that the thing that slowed it all up was,
well, the late notice, probably
not letting us really know how these conferences were finalized until like April was the problem.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
How do you schedule?
Yeah, and then because normally when we go through this process, we have a year before we actually play those games, and for whatever reason, they did it differently, and so it was really hard getting games. I mean, we have a hard time finding non-conference games anyway, and really, this is a different schedule for us. I like it. I mean, we're playing Brevard,
totally different.
Yeah, that's a. You know, probably a lot of people are picking them to win that league. They've got a good team coming back, and it's an old rivalry. You know, you talk to old Reynolds fans, they talk about always opening the season with Brevard.
Yeah, when I was in school, Brevard was one of our big rivals, and Tuscola.
Yeah, couldn't get them. But, you know, Maiden is I went to Newton Conover High School in Catawba County, grew up in the mill town, and – that was our huge rival. That was the game that you were going to play in front of 10,000 people. And they have a sign. You know, the guy, Coach Craig, they give me a hard time because the road from Newton to Maiden is only about 5 miles. But when you drive into Maiden from Newton, there's a sign that goes across the road. It's the biggest little football town in the world. And I used to, when I was in high school and we were on the bus and we'd go over there to play, I used to hate that. And I'll tell you what we all did on the bus to that sign. But that's another traditional North Carolina football school. And even though I hated them when I was playing them in high school, I've got a lot of respect for them as a program.
Didn't y'all have a quarterback out of Maiden a couple years ago, several years ago?
Yeah.
What's his name?
Put him on the spot.
He was after Alex, right?
Yeah.
He went to Brevard College.
He did. And I used to call – I called him Powers. I called him Kenny Powers because he reminded me of the guy on that.
I do love that show.
Yeah, he reminded me of that guy. But that was his nickname. I used to call him Kenny. I just called him Kenny Powers.
He was a good quarterback.
He was a really good quarterback. Threw the ball well.
Yeah. So the conference, very similar. We drop McDowell, which we do every so many years. You lose McDowell, you pick them up. They're gone right now. Irwin, Asheville, North Buncombe, Inca, TC. How you feel about the conference?
It's good. I mean, that's what we wanted. We wanted to stay up here. We didn't want to get kicked off the mountain.
Right.
I don't know right now, you know, on paper – I mean, everybody's talking about who's got this guy coming back, who's got that guy coming back, and none of that really matters until we start playing. So you're not sure. I think, you know, Irwin's got a little taste of it in their mouth now. They're playing good football. Their coaches did a really good job coaching those guys last year. I think they're going to, you know, they're going to be back hungry. And then they've got, like I said, they've got some good players coming back. Asheville's Asheville, so they're going to be they're going to be at the top of it. And you know, TC, I'm not sure. I've talked to JD several times, and I get that. You have to read through all the. I think TC will be fine. I think Inca's going to be better. I think they're going to be better. We didn't get to play them in JVs this year because of the storm, but I know they had some good young players, and
they had a good middle school group there a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I would not be surprised if Inca is much improved. In North Buncombe, I'm just not sure at all.
They got the leading rusher in the MAC coming back.
Yeah, now he's good. He's a good player. He's a good player, and he'll carry the ball 400 times probably.
Yes, they will not throw it.
Probably not.
that ought to be a heck of a battle, TC Asheville Reynolds for that 6A title.
Yeah, it's that's fun because we're all rivals. We all want to beat each other, and that's pretty cool that we're all in that thing together fighting for that that 6A part of it.
So I'm not 100% familiar. How likely is it that more than one of you make the playoffs?
I think it's pretty likely.
Do you think all three can make the playoffs?
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I think it's possible. I think it's with RPI being the major factor, and all three of us are playing pretty good non-conference schedules. And that's what you got to have, because yep. I've been in situations where we have lost games and climbed in the Max Preps poll.
Right.
And we have won games by a large margin and dropped in the Max Preps poll.
Yeah.
You know, last year was a really good example of it. We started the season, you know, 1-4, but we lost to three of the best teams in the state.
Yeah.
And we make it to the end of this thing, and we're playing for a conference championship and a number one seed in 3A because of the level of competition we were playing. And I'm for that. I agree. I think you need to play good people.
Yeah, you need to be rewarded for playing those tough, being willing to play those tough games.
Yeah, and so what if you lose? I mean, nobody likes to lose worse than I do. But I love coaching in big games. I love our players getting a chance to play in games that matter. You know, we're asking these guys to do, and the time they're investing in it, the work they're doing. Every Friday night needs to be fun. It needs to be a big deal. And yeah, when you play a schedule like that, it's going to be tough to go 10-0.
You're also going to see, I think, bigger attendance.
Yeah.
I don't want to see you win 60-0. I'm probably not coming to that game. But if you're going to play, you know, you're playing Brevard, and it's what I think will be a pretty good football game, I'm probably coming.
Yeah, and you want to see good players play.
Yeah.
I mean, there's good players all across Western North Carolina. The more of them we can get in our stadium playing against our guys, the better. I think for years, that was part of what made the Asheville Reynolds game so good, because the best football players in Western North Carolina were on that field for the most part that night, and you could see them all at one time.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's much more to me. It's much more enjoyable to go out there and play against teams that are really good. Gives you a reason when you go to prepare on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday when guys are sitting in that meeting. And we're talking about all this stuff, and we're going through it because they know this may be a one-possession game. If I screw this up, this may be the difference in winning or losing the game. I don't know. It's just much, much more enjoyable to me.
So how many schools told you no when you tried to schedule? Do you know?
A lot. I don't know the number.
Do you have one that was most surprising? You were like, man, I'm really surprised they didn't want to play.
No. Most of the ones that told me no, I knew they would tell me no, but I had to ask them.
Your point's well taken, because you've always said over the years your goal is to be playing football when people are putting up their Christmas trees.
Mm-hmm.
And if those kids can go through that gauntlet that you put them through, because that's what they're going to see in at least the second round, if not sooner, of the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The goal for us has always been win a conference championship and play when the Christmas trees are up. And to do that, you've got to play good people, because I've seen a lot of teams, in particular in this area, 8-2, 9-1, 10-0, lose in the first round.
And they're not ready.
No, you're not. You're not ready. You haven't been through, and you know, I go back to the 22 team that was so good late in the season, and some of the things that we went through earlier in the season, some of the setbacks that we kind of dealt with that were disappointing, and we weren't, you know, left people scratching their head, you know, how good are we if we, you know, this happened to us. And in particular, just some of those little slip ups. And, then watch that run they went on. And then we beat some good people.
Yeah.
I mean,
real good.
Yeah. Yeah, but
that was the Chambers season, wasn't it?
Yeah,
yeah.
Pat's
yeah.
favorite game.
Oh,
he still talks about that game.
Great game.
You can look at in 23, we go to East Forsyth. We lose the game. I mean, we're on the verge of getting blown out, and we got it fixed, and we got some things, and we got it together, and we had a chance late to tie the game up or to win it. I can't remember. I think we had a chance to win it, and We just couldn't make it happen. But they were one of the best teams in the state, no matter what classification you want to talk about. They were in the top three. Well, yeah, we lost the game, but we gained so much for going out there and playing toe-to-toe with those guys. And our kids played their tails off that night. And if you saw the guys that they were lined up against, I mean, that's a bunch of Power 4, G5 college football players. The best players in Forsyth County right now are playing at East Forsyth. And, you know, that game catapulted us into the playoffs and some other wins that we had later in the season.
Anyway, is there any way to do away with split conferences, Coach?
No, not with 8 classifications.
Are you happy with the 8A split?
I'm fine with it. I'm not griping about it. What I don't understand is why a long time ago when we were 4A and, you know, we were 4 classifications.
Yeah.
And then we would hit the playoffs and we would subdivide. It worked.
Right.
It was great.
Worked fine.
It worked fine. Why didn't we just keep doing that? But do it for every sport, every team sport.
Wouldn't that have been the easiest thing?
That was because the reason we went away from it was because basketball and soccer and baseball and everybody else was asking for the same thing. They weren't saying take it away from football.
Right. They just wanted to do it.
Just do it for us too. And the response was, well, we'll just take it away. and so we went through this period where we just were back to the old way of doing it. And then the answer was, we'll go 8. Well, then when you go 8, now that becomes a nightmare because there's conferences that have 3 classifications. Mm. But there's no way around it because of geographically where those folks are placed.
So we asked you last year, now that you've seen the 8A, do you have to have conferences? Can we do away with conferences and just do seating on your max preps rank for the playoffs?
No, I think you got to do conferences, or you got to do regions or something. You've got to I don't know. I still like the conference model.
Yeah.
I think the
– winning a conference championship is still important.
It's still important. It's still important to our players. It's still important to the players at TC. It's still important to the guys at Asheville. It's, you know, that conference championship is the first thing everybody is trying to get a hold of. I think that matters.
So, I know with that 8A split, like last year in the playoffs, Irwin, I think the team they lost to is now an 8A school.
Yeah.
Do you think that it'll be better as far as numbers?
Yes.
In the playoffs now?
Yes, yes. I think that where you're going to see the biggest difference, you know, we saw it, you know, we go back to that 22 season. We're talking about, you know, we played Chambers. We played Butler.
Those are huge schools.
Those are huge. And you go to Weddington. We were the smallest 4A school in the state with around a little over 1,200 kids. And we're playing teams that are more than double our size.
Yeah.
We had to get rid of that. That was trash. And then you're in the same boat with some of the 1A schools where they're – you know, you've got a 1A school with 300 kids in it, and you've got a 1A school that's got 650 or 700. They're playing in the same deal. I mean, when you're talking about being able to draw that many more players, it matters a lot. So I think it'll help with. It's definitely going to be good as far as numbers. You're playing schools that are the same or very similar sized as you are.
I've been hearing the years I've been following Reynolds high school football. This isn't indicative of just Reynolds football, but it almost seemed like, to your point about going down the mountain, any of these area teams up here going down the mountain in the playoff season, that's where you run into trouble. I know that Mike and Lewis, when they educated me that Weddington, that year you all played Weddington, I didn't know who Weddington was, but that was the, what did you all call them? The
West North Carolina Killer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so you ran into that. Does this format fix some of that then or no?
Oh, it does. Yeah, okay. It does. It fixes a lot of that.
You are supposed to tell Coach Long as I said that.
I wasn't.
They beat Asheville and Reynolds, unfortunately, in football.
We had a student at Reynolds. Several years ago, he was one of my favorite kids in the school. He was one of our special needs kids. Great kid, really funny. He would take our advanced PE classes and stuff. And he was one of those kids. He was great with numbers and great with stats. He could tell me, Coach Laws, in 2009, your record was 14-2, and you did this and this and this. I mean, he just knew things like that, stats. He could just spit them out if it was teams he cared about. But he would always tell me, he would see me, he'd say, Coach Laws, you know, Weddington is your kryptonite. You're right, buddy. They are.
Well, they're a good program. Goes to the earlier point you made about one play meaning something. It was one play in that game that was the difference.
We were talking about that the other day, that Weddington game in the fourth round of the playoffs. Our kids played so hard that night, and Weddington played really well too. And there were probably three or four plays that we could put up on the board that dictated the whole game. The whole game was those four plays. And two of them were negative things. One was we ran a fake punt, scored on it, and they called it back for a
pancake block.
For a pancake block. A really, really terrible football call. If that dude that made that call did not need to be calling in that game. Mm-hmm.
It's not holding, it's total domination. Yeah.
And then we went for it on fourth down, we faked a field goal, and I think we came up about 3 inches short on it. And, if those two plays go a different way, it may be the difference. Because we lose the game by seven. And we were close several times of making something happen. And they were so good defensively that you just could not make any mistakes.
Even when you played Weddington when you had Rico, he gets hurt on the 1 yard line in the final seconds, and you got to bring in fresh sophomore Nate St. Ange.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
I'd still like to have Nate St. Ange bring in off the bench. That'd be nice, right?
Right.
Now.
Right.
Yeah.
He could play corner or running back or wide receiver.
He could play anywhere. You could play him at right tackle if you needed to.
He'd figure it out. So the first year we did this interview, Coach, I don't know if you remember, I asked you the most football guy you'd ever had. And you said Nate. And then you said James Lee. Second year, last year, I asked you your favorite football memory. So this year,
you don't put me on the spot.
The craziest thing you've ever seen on the football field.
Oh man,
I was talking to some other Reynolds people this week about the craziest thing we'd ever seen. So you can think about it a minute. It's all right. I like that one question where I just got to put you on the spot, and that people are asking you about it.
You can about find a crazy thing every other week.
Well, sure.
The craziest thing that could have really killed us happened again. We go back to 22. We're playing Chambers. We've done everything we could do to win the ball game. They give them a fifth down. You remember that?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
They got five downs. Yeah. And this is a deep playoff game. Yeah. These are supposed to be the best officials. And I'm yelling on the sideline, the down marker's wrong. This should be fourth down. And the official turns to me and says, I know, Coach. I've got it because they have the thing on their hand. He says, no, I've got it. I know they're wrong. We got it. So the pass is incomplete, and we just keep going. They line up to run another play.
Yeah,
and I'm losing my mind.
Yeah, you can imagine.
But I've got to be careful because I think they're inside the 40, and I can't do something stupid and get a 15-yard penalty. But I'm trying to point out to them. And they, after the game was over, they realized the mistake they made. But against Chambers, you can't give them an extra down. That was crazy. That was crazy. But I'll tell you something funny that happened. It was my first year coaching. It wasn't at Reynolds. I had went back to my old high school.
What, you coached somewhere other than Reynolds?
Believe it or not.
Okay.
I was actually I wasn't even officially employed. I was student teaching, and I had went back to my old high school to be a student teacher, and I was coaching that fall at Newton Conover. And so I'm coaching in a JV game, and it's around Halloween. And we're standing on the sidelines, getting ready to play the game. The kickoff team hadn't even went out. And one of the players comes up to me, and he says, Coach, you need to go down there and look at Jermaine. And I said, what do you mean? He said, just go down there and look at him. So I walked down the sideline, and I look at the kid. And, again, it's close to Halloween. The kid has got Dracula teeth in his mouth. And, but here's the, and so I say to Jermaine, I said, Jermaine, what are you, man, you can't play with those in your mouth. What are you doing with those in your mouth? He said, well, coach, he said, I lost my mouthpiece and I was scared to ask y'all for another one. So I just put these in my mouth.
Oh, that's funny. Can you that's imagine? Crazy.
Fantastic.
That was the first year I coached high school.
Dracula teeth. It's about these.
Yeah.
We were talking about, me and one of my buddies were talking about the streaker that ran. Were you around when the streaker ran on the Reynolds field?
But yeah, and I don't remember it. I mean, I know it happened.
Right.
But I don't remember seeing it. Did it happen during halftime? Were we off the field? I think we might have been off the field.
Pat, would you ever consider streaking?
Nobody wants to see this at all.
Okay. Yeah. Did you know there was a streaker?
I was not aware. No, that's something new.
Derek and I were talking about that this week. So, the streaker.
Derek can probably remember better than me.
He's so much younger than us. He remembers everything. And Carson.
There's a lot of things that are crazy. I mean, if I had the rest of the guys sitting in here, the rest of the coaches, they could start throwing you some good stuff probably, but. Or, you know, stupid things that one of us said or did. And
now, that would be a podcast worth listening to right there. That would be fantastic. I think we'd just give them the microphones and sit on the couch and enjoy a beverage.
When all of us old guys on the staff were at Reynolds coaching under Bobby, under Coach Posh, because he's the one that kind of brought us all there to start with. And we said back then, we said, you know, we need to write all this stuff down. And when we get to the end of our career, we need to write a book and just tell the stories of things that happened in the course of a high school football season. People would buy it, you know, because it would be hilarious and it would be silly. And people don't really understand what really goes on because all they see is Friday night. But we were too stupid. We didn't do it.
We can still do the book.
Yeah, but I don't know. Well, I can't remember all my stories.
You got anything else, Pat?
No, I think that went back. Unless there's something else you want to bring up, Coach, that we didn't talk about. Anything else?
You got any fundraisers or anything coming up?
Well, we're finishing up an email fundraiser right now. I think it's probably done today. Actually, we've got the traditional golf tournament coming up in July.
Oh, yeah.
Where's it at?
It is at Kenmure again. Coach Green, that's one of his things. Joey does that for us, puts it on. I think it's the 14th. I want to say it's July 14th. But that's coming up. That's a huge fundraiser for it. And it's fun. It's if you like to play golf, it's a really fun day because you're out on a great
golf course. That's a nice course.
It's a great golf course. We have it to ourselves. They close the course is closed on Mondays. It's really fun. And a lot of that money, you know, we've obviously got bills to pay with it, but a lot of that goes right back to the players. And then it won't be long after that. Then you'll start seeing those cards coming around and players trying to sell those cards and all that kind of stuff. I just, you know, the people that, whether you're a Reynolds fan or you're an Asheville fan, whatever, whoever the team is that you support, you know, give them some money because it's to run these programs the right way. It takes money and it takes a lot to really do it right. And we've always went into it with the idea with our players. We wanted to treat them the best that we could treat them while they were playing on Friday nights. I wanted them to feel special because of how hard they work and what they put into it, the pressure they feel, the things that are said about them out there in social media. They put a lot on the line to do this. And let's treat them and make them feel as important as we can as they go about it. And plus, if you're going to be successful, you have to spend money. And so support your team. Support the team you care about.
Do you anticipate with the budget cuts any coming out of your guys, like football, athletic budget?
I don't think so because the athletic budget pretty much is based on gate. We don't really get money from the county or anybody like that for athletics. Your athletics are, what we sell in tickets, what individual teams raise on their own, and then what booster clubs, push in there. And obviously we've got a great booster club that does a lot. for Reynolds High School, and they're going doing a pretty good job right now. But that's where it comes from.
Would you say they're doing better since Pat left?
Probably.
I don't know. I miss Pat. I kind of miss seeing him around.
Yeah. Old Pat.
I'm not going anywhere. As long as Coach McCurry wants me doing that live stream, I'll still be doing that. But if he gets tired of me or you get tired of me, I won't be. But
I'll be honest with you. I have no idea what happens on the live stream.
You don't?
I don't.
Oh, I'm sure somebody tells you everything they say.
No, they don't. Because everybody that...
Is at the game?
Everybody that I'm talking to is at the game. Yeah. So the people that are... Well, my mom. Now, my mom does listen.
Oh, does she? Could.
Yeah. So you better be careful.
That's tough.
We behave. Because Chris St. Ange and I.
My mom can't come to the games anymore because she said she gets too worked up. She gets too nervous. So she turns it on in her house and just does laps around her house while we're playing. And so anyway, yeah, you better be careful.
That new platform that we've used last year and this year. We actually know what we're doing with it now, that Huddle platform. Holy cow, is that an awesome... I mean, you can make an ESPN-type production with that stuff. It's amazing.
And we use the Huddle platform for film. That's what we use. I mean, it's probably not... Obviously, it's not the same thing you guys are using, but it's how we share film. It's how we trade film with other schools. It's how we put recruiting film together. It is... They do a good job. It makes... You know, I go all the way back to when we would play the game, we would get back to Reynolds, we would have to take it from the camera to this first, it was VHS. And then it was DVD. And then the next morning, I'm up at 6 o'clock getting in my truck and driving and meeting the other coach somewhere to trade. Mm-hmm. Now we're doing all that with a push of a button. You're not having to do all that kind of stuff anymore. Huddle has definitely changed the football world.
For sure. For the good.
For the good. For the good.
It's still best to support the Reynolds Rockets in person. So even though I'm doing live stream, in person is better.
When Pat played, they had to share the tape they shared was on tablet. They had to tap it into the tablet and take it over.
Yeah, telegraph. It was good.
Anyway, Coach, thank you so much for coming.
Thanks for your time.
We appreciate it.
No problem. No problem. I enjoy it.
And its series is going to keep going, right, Mike? Who's up next?
So next up is Asheville High Coach Court Radford.
Awesome. That ought to be exciting.
Yeah. We got some more to line up. We have 3 or 4 more already in the books, and we got some more to call. We're going to get everybody we can.
Before we know it, we'll be right into the football season.
It'll be football season before you know it.
Indeed. Well, thanks again for tuning in. Until next time, from Mike Anderson, thanks again, Coach Laws, and we'll see you on the other side.